Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello, I'm Georgie Courage-Cole, and welcome to today's Sherlock's In Conversation With podcast. Today, I'm joined by my co-host Charlotte Collins and two special guests, Lucy Fry and M. Caton Thick. Lucy is a writer and a speaker, and M. an artist, and they're joining us today to celebrate Pride Month. They're going to be sharing their coming out stories, their advice for those who might be struggling with their sexuality, and I'm hoping their hopes for the next generation of gay women. Welcome both of you.
Hi.
Hey.
Thank you for coming. Thank you for giving up your time. It's Pride Month. I mean, Pride is now so big. I remember back in the day, I mean, Pride started in the 90s. It's been going that long. And it used to be one day. And I remember people, gay or otherwise, just getting really excited because it was like a festival in London and a massive piss up. And it's got bigger and bigger and bigger, and it's now a whole month.
Damn right.
We at Sherlock's really believe in having conversations, in empowering women, in perhaps going to the difficult places that people might not be able to go to on their own. And so here we are. I'm always very aware that I say the wrong thing, so don't be offended.
Never.
Because I'm like, shit, I'm so unpolitically correct. But I
always ask.
But I care and I do ask.
Doing well so far.
So do you prefer to be called a lesbian or a gay woman?
You're looking at me, but I feel like we're different generations. I'm sort of 40 this year, and Emma's, I mean, I can see from your skin that you are far younger. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Wow.
Okay, so you're aging well.
Maybe we're not so different, but I think we may have different views on this. I went for gay, don't particularly like lesbian, then went for pansexual, then decided I was sexually fluid. Now I'd just be called sexual. I mean, I don't care.
Love that.
Call me what you want, probably not heterosexual. Without sounding too cliched, like, I reserve the right to self-identify, and it's what I think about myself that matters, and people can call me what they want, but they tend to say that I'm pretty gay.
So I have to say to everyone, I went to school with Lucy and we haven't seen each other for 20 years, but you are a writer and I've quietly followed you from the sidelines for years, and you're pretty confident and strong. You're obviously very comfortable in your own skin, maybe not always.
These days, yeah, after 10 years of therapy.
Okay.
I would say confidence doesn't negate vulnerability. Is what I'd say to that. I'm confident in my sexuality. It took me a couple of years to get there. I had a lot of shame and internalized homophobia, definitely, when I came out. I was 26. Well, we'll get into that. But I literally wake up every morning, I'm like, yeah, okay, this is awesome. I just love it.
Amazing.
I love it.
You were always confident, though. You were confident. I was a year above you. You blow me.
It doesn't apply when you're nearly 40.
Actually, you must be 40 already then.
You're all right. Yeah. Okay. 1 point to you, well done. Anyway, you were both head of the same house, both quite sporty, both quite confident. Mm. I think that's a brilliant point. Confidence does not negate vulnerability. I love that. Mm. I'm going to write that on my wall.
Never.
And people can be horrible to you if they think you're confident.
Yeah.
And
damn right.
And not see. And you're a confident person,
yeah.
Charlotte.
But
too.
People think I'm more confident than I am, and therefore think it's okay to tear me down. Yeah.
Emily.
Yeah, I mean,
perhaps it's a question.
Yeah, I call myself gay, I guess, most commonly, or lesbian. They're the only two phrases I use, really. But I think gay is quite encompassing, which I like. And I'm just very, like, proud of who I am. Now, similarly, when I came out, it was not like that. I think I had a lot of self-doubt and I thought I was quite on my own. I didn't realise there was a lovely community and I certainly wouldn't, like, brag about it or talk openly about it. So I've actually got my first therapy session tonight. So 10 years from now, maybe I'll be where you are.
I'm sure you'll move quicker than I
big
did.
Big day today.
Yeah. Wow, that is a big day. And that's because you feel you need it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Who doesn't need therapy, frankly?
Well, that's kind of what I'm coming to realise, I think, yeah. I'm looking forward to it. My confidence has grown massively in the last few years. I would never have done this 5 years ago or something.
Well, thank you for giving out your time and doing it, because I'm sure there are women listening who are gay And that's what we're hoping in today, is that there are women who are gay, who are unsure about their sexuality, are fluid, who are whatever they are, and don't know how to broach the conversation. Can we start with, at what point did you know you were gay? I mean, do you think you always knew?
Well, retrospectively, it's slightly different. When I became conscious of it, I could look back all the way through to primary school and
that's
be
exactly
like,
the same.
Of course, I got it. So in that way, I suppose I would, I think I probably am gay, but now I would feel more sexually fluid. But certainly I look back and I think, yes, I did fulfil all those cliches of being the only girl in the football team till you came along, Georgie, and joined the football team.
And, I think you'll find I was in the football team first.
I don't. That is not my experience, as we say in therapy. And, you know, being super tomboyish. I remember the school disco, actually, at our school, where we could wear whatever we wanted. All the young girls, in fact, they were all in kind of skirts and dressings, and I turned up basically looking like Danny from Greece, you know, with a leather jacket on and gelled hair. And so there were all those cliches, which doesn't by any means mean that you're going to turn out as anything non-heterosexual.
But it now makes sense.
But it did for me, and those cliches were right, and they're there for a reason. However, I think I was quite blessed that my parents had absolutely no idea what to look for. And so they happily called me Andrew for 3 years as a joke, you know, because I wanted to be called Andrew. I don't know why I chose that name. So, and I think that kind of gender, it wasn't even gender dysphoria, but like a desire to be identified more as a boy, was all to do with sexuality. It's nothing, actually. I feel very happy with my gender identification now. Then when I did actually come out at 26, then it all made sense. I was completely unconscious of it until I started having dreams about hot blonde women.
And how old were you when that happened?
I remember I was in my third year at uni. I was 21.
Oh, so quite relatively late.
Yeah, that's quite a gap.
And then I continued to sort of ignore it and date men.
I was going to say, did you date men? Did you have relationships?
I had many relationships with men. I didn't kiss a woman until I was 26. I'm ever regretful about that.
All those wasted years. Yeah, I have a feeling you made up for it.
No comment.
Read her book. She said it's quite X-rated. I was like, that's fine, we can do X-rated.
Yeah, I need a copy of this.
Yeah, you might do.
What about you? Did you always know?
Not at all. I think this says quite a lot about sort of the lack of gay narrative when I was growing up, actually. It seems obvious now, there were so many signs, but it wasn't until I was 20, I think, that the idea genuinely even crossed my mind. Mm. And it went from there to me coming out quite quickly, I think. But, you know, at school I had flings with guys, but I couldn't get my head around why people like sleep with men so much. It's really terrible.
That would have been your clue.
Yeah.
I don't know if that changes when you're...
Well, that's the thing. I guess it's not always fantastic, is it? But genuinely to the point where for a couple of years I thought I might be asexual. That's how naive I was about it all. It's so mad now, but I think society even 10 years ago was so different. Or 15 years ago, you know, what you're shown on TV, or like, no one in my school was out. I'm sure that's changed.
Were you
now
at a mixed school?
Yeah. And just everyone around me was dating boys and at parties was getting with boys. You know, I don't think I was necessarily a sheep, but that's all I knew. So that's what I did. And that was until I was, 19 or 20. And then I think at second year of uni, one of my friends must have had an idea because she was telling me about a lesbian that was in her halls with her. And it all kind of just triggered something.
Gosh, she almost identified it.
Yeah, I think, when my parents find out, my dad was like, well, yeah, I know. I was like, oh, why didn't you tell me? Would have been really helpful to know that 5 years ago.
My friends were the same. They were like, I was like, I've got this big thing to tell you. You know, I've fallen in love with a woman. They were like, yeah, cool. What do you want to drink?
Yeah.
and that really hurt. I felt a lot of shame about the fact that they had seen something that I hadn't seen about me.
Yeah.
It made me want to go into a hole. But of course, they were just trying to be super cool.
Yeah. That's the thing, not batting an eyelid. But
yeah. I grew up being really friendly with a guy. I mean, we all knew. I just don't think he knew yet.
Yeah, if it's not around you, you don't see it. It's not in your conscious awareness.
Yeah.
Then, unless you're like absolutely 150% like just gay, then you're probably not going to find it until bang, it's right there. Mm.
But I get that idea of shame, because it's almost like knowing that there was a spotlight on you that you had never seen, and that everybody talked about it, that horrible thing
that people are talking about,
which doesn't mean that it was in a negative way,
exactly.
But of course,
you feel bad for your younger self as well. I think that you kind of weren't listening to them, or didn't give them the opportunity to be a certain way, and just kind of this blinkered vision, just ploughing on with this unhappy lifestyle. Mm.
And did you, once you knew, were you like, right, I'm telling everyone? Or did you try and hide it? Did you try and
But from the realisation to the coming out, I think it sounds like it was much quicker than yours. I think it was only a few months, actually. I told my sisters. I remember one night when we were out and I was just all tearful, and they were obviously like, whatever. And then my sister actually told my mum, which was quite nice. I didn't have to do that.
Did you want her to do that?
Well, we hadn't planned it beforehand. I had a male friend come stay at my parents for the weekend. And my mum at that point was just desperate for me to have some kind of relationship with anyone. So after we'd gone, she was pestering my sister. Lizzie was all like hangover cranky, so didn't want to be answering her questions. So she was like, Emma and Freddie a thing. And then apparently she just said no because she's gay. And then texted me saying, by the way, mum knows. And that was nice. That was fine for me. So I didn't want to have to have that conversation. And then she told my dad.
Did you then subsequently talk to your mum about it?
I always have this thing about parents where if you're heterosexual, you never really sit your parents down and say, by the way, I like sleeping with the opposite sex.
Yes.
Yeah, it's such a good point.
It's awkward. It's awkward.
It's just, I don't know why it's kind of why coming out is expected of people. Obviously, sometimes it's essential. But, you know, I wouldn't want to talk to my mum about sex in any capacity normally.
Neither. And I'm straight.
She did try, bless her, but I was like, yeah, it's fine. I'll tell you when you need to know about things.
Yeah. How did they react to telling their friends? I mean, I feel like it probably would only get easier for parents from here on.
Yeah.
But, you know, I remember my white brother marrying somebody black from Uganda. And, like, that was a big, big, big thing. Mm. 30, whatever, however many years ago. And that was, rightly or wrongly, like, quite hard.
It's a generational thing.
For my stepdad. It was a generational thing. And, God, everyone then got on brilliantly. But, you know, there was like an adaption process. Mm. And yeah, it was a generational thing. I feel like now, if my children turn around and tell me that they're gay and they're happy, I'll be fucking delighted. I mean, literally, just all I want is happy, healthy, confident children.
Yeah. Maybe this is naive, but I can't imagine that our generation's children will have to have those conversations. Because as you say, and now sexual fluidity is there's such a big conversation around it, and it's so different. Or
so maybe
it's not
different,
there's so much more out there. But I don't think I would require my children, I don't have children, but I don't think I'd require them to come up and tell me.
You could be anything you want to be, you just got to be happy.
I mean, my parents were amazing. I knew they would be, really. My mum's an artist, and I think, to be honest, I think it lends kudos to her bohemian this bohemian image that she's carefully curated over the last few years. So I'm the youngest of five children, so it was probably inevitable one of us was going to be a turncoat. So, yeah, they've always been amazing.
What were your parents like, Lucy?
Well, at the time, they were separating, so they were going through a huge amount themselves. And I think they already had a lot to deal with, kind of emotionally, and it was a shock. You know, in the same way that it wasn't a shock to any of my friends who were kind of had some gaydar and were like aware of this stuff.
Yeah.
My parents were the opposite. They didn't have a single gay friend. They would probably notice a super queenie guy down the street and be like, he's gay. But other than that, they just didn't see it. So for them, I think it was the shock, and I didn't deal with it very well in the way I told them. My brother found it hardest, I think. I emailed my mother and I barely even told my father. I just kind of let the news filter through because we weren't talking much at the time. So I think they did struggle with it a bit. My mum's first reaction was,
and did you understand that?
At the time, no. At the time, I was so desperate to be held and to be understood, I couldn't cope with it. Mm. Now, yeah, totally. My mum's first reaction, I have to say, was, whatever you do, I love you. You know, it was absolutely clear. But it was obvious to me that she was worried about what people would think.
Mm.
And I can now see that that's her stuff and not mine. But at the time, I was incredibly fragile and felt quite unsupported. My sister, on the other hand, was just like, cool, what's it like to kiss a woman? and, you know, has been absolutely, like, 100% behind me on that. So different people react different ways, I guess. It can be very challenging. Yeah.
How would you describe the subsequent years to you coming out? You describe it, not me. You came out, you were like, whoa, it's finally out there. I can live my life. I can go for it. That was liberating, I presume.
Must have some steam.
Exciting.
To blow off.
Yeah.
Well, it's very hard to sort of separate out a kind of sexuality journey from the rest of one's life, you know. And I also got sober at 30 and I'm nearly 10 years sober and went into therapy and have since nearly finished training as a psychotherapist as well and have written books and had a kid and, you know, all this stuff that is all swept up in it. But if I just talk about sexuality and try and pull that out, then I'd say, you know, it was great for a while. And I think that I did come to realize I was much happier with my now ex, but with very good friends, wife Bella. And we lived a good life. We got civilly partnered. I think I probably did that to try and be accepted. I'm not sure that I would make that choice again.
Right.
Purely because I'm not sure I believe in...
And when you say civilly partnered, sorry, was that before marriage was legalised in the way it is now?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It was
because it was quite a long time ago, wasn't it?
2011, I think, that we did that. And you know, we went to Chelsea Town Hall and we had a big party and we both wore white dresses. And looking back, it's pretty obvious to me that I would have been happier in a kind of kick-ass white trouser suit. I wanted them to see, hey, look, we can be in two dresses. I think I had a point to prove. Anyway, then Bella and I, we were together for 12 years. This is going to lead to a bigger conversation, maybe, or maybe another podcast. But 3 years before we split up, we opened up our relationship because I met someone else and she wanted to be free to be non-monogamous. And I met someone who completely transformed my sexuality and my life. And, you know, I have since separated from, but it still makes me deeply sad to think about, although it was the right decision. But it was 4 years of like just a whole new world and coming out again as polyamorous, which I'm currently not anymore. But, you know, so all these different coming outs and, you know, this is who I am then. Now I'm not straight, I'm gay. Oh, now I'm going to become a non-biological mother. Now I've got a wife and a girlfriend. How does that work?
Does it ever?
I think it can. It didn't.
No, and I'm fascinated. We talked about this on the phone briefly.
Yeah, well, I'm now writing a book, a non-fiction book about the different relationship choices. And I've interviewed a lot of people for whom it does work. I think it can work at different phases in different ways. For me, it was a lot to cope with. We were three women with quite a lot of attachment issues. I don't think it worked for us. But I think it can.
Do you think, you know, the need to kind of repeatedly come out or identify as whatever that thing may be is something that you feel the need to do, like, for your own identity, or something that kind of society demands of you?
I felt at the time like I did, because I wanted to give my girlfriend some visibility. Mm. Like, and that was very important to her. But I did keep it too secret for too long. And that was really painful and destructive for her, I think. And I wish I hadn't. Coming out as non-monogamous was 100 times harder than coming out as gay. I got more judgment, especially around my son. You're going to fuck your kid up. Do you have no idea what you're doing? Like, from people really close to me. Mm. And I had more shame around that and more difficulty, like, without a doubt. I think in the long run, it was probably maybe sticking a plaster on our marriage a bit, because we both still adored each other. And now we've realized we can just be friends and co-parents, and that's okay. And now I'm in a new relationship that is consciously monogamous, and I feel increasingly really joyful about it. And it's calm, and it's right for me where I am right now. Mm. But both of my previous important relationships have made me who I am and were extraordinarily powerful. So I don't know if that answers any of your questions. I feel like I could go on for a journey.
It's fascinating. And let's come on to motherhood in a minute. Can we talk to you about relationships, and had significant relationships, long-term relationships?
God, my journey sounds incredibly vanilla now. I mean, after I came out, to be honest, it was kind of an anticlimax. You know, I still didn't really know any lesbians. I was quite naive about lesbians even existing. I assumed that there were hardly any around, and that I was always going to be on my own.
Must be hard, actually.
Yeah, it was quite lonely, and it was obviously before dating apps existed. So it's you had quite a small circle. So I just was kind of on my own for quite a long time. I had this kind of fling with someone, and that didn't work out. And then for a few years, it was semi-bleak, to be honest. And then dating apps came out, and that changed.
That's so interesting.
Changed my life, I would say. Yeah. Definitely my love life and my sex life.
See, because
yeah, obviously, how do you know?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, especially, 8 years ago or something.
I mean, you have to go to a gay bar.
You have to go to a gay bar, and then that's quite a specific set of people.
And they're all being shot down.
Yeah.
Are they?
Well, there's not such demand. So we're at this kind of transition phase where, then, you know, you don't need the gay bars anymore, but you do need a gay bar.
Yeah, they're lovely things.
And do you want to be in a gay bar?
Yeah, I would. I enjoy gay bars, but I wouldn't go there to meet someone. You wouldn't want to rely on that as your main source, certainly.
Source of food and drink.
So, yeah, dating apps came out, and that opened my eyes massively, because you meet so many more people. I mean, I'd never really dated before. It made me much more well-rounded, I think, and understood the kind of culture and society that I was part of, and like, made me really enjoy it and be proud of it and stop wishing that I wasn't gay.
Did it help you identify what kind of women you were looking for? Because I imagine there's a sort of, oh, well, I know a lesbian, so let's set you up because you're
it
a lesbian.
It still happens. Yeah.
But, Jesus Christ, how many men am I not compatible with? So I can imagine that gets pretty tedious.
Yeah, I mean, I think I always knew that I was kind of into very effeminate women. Women that, you know, not to feed into stereotype, that you wouldn't necessarily assume were gay at a glance, which for me definitely made it harder. And that's why dating apps were so great, because obviously it gives you, you know, a much wider scope. It was a great journey, and I have had three long-term relationships, well, long-term-ish, a year or so. But I didn't have a girlfriend until I was 26, and they also, I think, helped shape me, make me a much better person.
You mentioned at the beginning finding a community and mm-hmm. a group of people. Did that come for you from dating, or how did you find, I mean, is it friends? Is it, you know, just an awareness that there are other people out there? What does that look like?
I think definitely dating apps, and the beauty of dating women, I think this is true to say over heterosexual dating maybe, is the strength of the bond you form with people, even on the first or second date. You get really strong relationships with them. And I'm really good friends with lots of girls I've dated that, you know, didn't go anywhere, weren't compatible in that respect. But some of my best friends I met on dating apps. Yeah. And that's a really nice thing.
Someone said to me once, who was gay, very happily gay, said, I would still choose for my child not to be, because life would be so much easier. Do you feel like life is harder because...
In my personal experience, I've not really encountered much negativity at all. I've had much more joy from it than the negativity. The only things that spring to mind are, you know, classic gross men in clubs that think you're kissing the girl for their benefit, or just tell you've not slept with the right guy before, and, you know, that kind of gross stuff.
But you get gross stuff from men as
a
straight girl as well.
So, yeah, try and stop them. So
maybe you haven't slept with the right guy.
Maybe they had a point, yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Yeah, again, I work in a company full of women. The creative space is very open. You know, I live in London. I'm from Brighton. So I think
these things help
massively. I know that I'm the exception probably rather than the rule.
Hopefully not the exception, but yes, you're in the right.
But yeah, I would absolutely have no qualms about having a gay child in terms of my experience.
I mean, nothing is more painful than trying to fit into a box you don't fit into. Yeah. So I would never wish that for my child. I think it entirely depends where you're living. You're living in Uganda. It's not.
Yeah.
I wouldn't wish that for my child. Mm-hmm. But I got a lot of that from, I think it was my mom, but my parents in general, and people just saying, parents sort of wanting to protect, saying, I just know your life's going to be a lot harder. And I get that, but
it's
also
there's
lots of things
that
are hard. You know, it's fucking hard being a freelance writer. It's hard to be driven towards therapy as a profession, but it's really hard to push down, you know, because gayness for me is about every single part of who I am. It feeds into. So I can't suppress that. That's the worst thing I would ever want my child to do. But if they were going to live in a world where they would get correctively raped or assaulted or murdered for being gay, then yeah, I probably would rather they pushed it down. I mean, survival.
But again, you have to hope that we're in a world now where children who are growing up now who are gay are going to live in an easier society for them.
But certainly we're
not in this society.
Well, in London, and maybe not even parts of the UK, Middle America, no way.
Most
of Africa,
corrective.
No way. Russia. Yeah. I mean, that's why when people say we don't need pride anymore, it's like, no, we do. And
like
maybe a piss up
or something.
But in India.
I talk about society, I mean.
Now we're dealing with microaggressions. And we're also dealing with the kind of homophobia that comes in sort of WhatsApp chats where it goes, oh my God, mate, this is so gay. Check out these homosexuals. And it's like all these videos. And you know, now we're dealing with that level of discrimination here. Yeah. But people are still being killed around the world.
Yeah, and even in rural communities in Northern England, where you must feel incredibly alone and really isolated. And
I have a friend who's been through 10 years of gay conversion therapy, having grown up in West of England.
Mm. I was about to say, conversion therapy was only last week,
yeah,
right?
I think it was as recent as last week.
Yeah,
which
last
is
week it was
completely mental.
Made illegal, which, I mean, absurd.
Yeah.
Can we talk about motherhood?
Let's. It's my favourite subject.
Oh, what's your story? So you're separated from your
I am separated from my son Rufus, his other mum. Although we're co-parenting super happily now, and she only lives two roads away. So amazing. That's easy. And we have family time as well. Like, we try and do it about once a week, where we have a meal together or we go out on an outing or something.
I mean, I think if you say that two women do that, people go, oh, that's really normal. I remember doing a workshop with a load of guys from Key for Life, this charity we work with, and he was like, yeah, I'm friends with my baby mama. And someone said, put your hand up, you've got anything you're proud of? And he sort of sat there. And I was like,
that's the thing I'm the most proud of.
That's a big deal. Yeah.
That we separated like that.
Yeah. And I take my hat off to anybody, whether they're two women, two men, a man or woman, that.
Oh, it's not necessarily easy. I mean, there's a lot of resentment.
Child, I think that's amazing. That was
the plan. But also, you know, she is the only other person in the world who I can wax lyrical to for about 15 minutes without stopping about how incredible our child is. Like, why would I lose that? Yeah. And we went through all of that together, you know, the insemination process and the... And, you know, why would I not want to be deeply connected to her? Mm. Apart from the fact that one of the things that screws up kids the most is hearing their parents badmouth the other parent. So it was really her. She was the driving force. She wanted to be pregnant. She always wanted to be pregnant. I never did. So that was simple. She found a donor. We went through a series of very strange people. One guy we found was proposing to sort of donate to about 60 people. He wants to set up a Facebook group for all the half siblings.
Oh, lovely. Oh my God. We'll get together and have
that's so American.
Anyway, there were lots of, and then some other people were like, yeah, you can have the sperm anytime you like. I'd like to deliver naturally, preferably to both of you at the same time.
Oh, great.
Like, I think my wife was so desperate to have a baby that she sort of slightly didn't see quite a lot of this dysfunction. And so, but we were very lucky. We then found someone on a website who we met up with for coffee and clicked with immediately. And he is still somebody we're in communication with, and we send the odd photo of our son to, and who I'm so thankful for every day. My wife had one miscarriage, then she was able to conceive again, then we had Rue, and I wasn't sure what to expect as a non-biological mother. I think it was suggested to me by family members that I might not bond with him properly because he wasn't mine. I never worried about that. No. I just was like, am I going to be able to keep writing? You know, what if my life ends? Will I ever sleep again? You know, I was worried about all those things. But it's been the most transformative experience ever. And he and I look really alike, which is bizarre. As
how
well.
Old is so he lovely.
He's four, just turned four.
And the process, like legally, now that you're separated...
We're civilly partnered, I'm right. On the birth certificate.
Right.
I absolutely have 50% responsibility for him. Mm-hmm. Amazing. Financially and otherwise.
But that wouldn't have been the case if you didn't have that partnership.
If you go through a clinic, I'm actually not hot on this, so I don't know. But if you go through a clinic, I think not. I mean, I think, yes, it is protected.
Mm-hmm. But that would be a worry, wouldn't it? Like if
you hear stories about people that are together for 20 years and then, the spouse dies and they have no rights over the child.
Awful. We checked all that out. But we did an at-home artificial insemination. So the whole thing cost us about £200.
I was about to say, so no IVF, no...
Just
turkey based.
The donor would come round. We would have a lovely but slightly awkward conversation. My wife and I would go out for a long-ish walk. He would text to say, I'm done.
3 minutes.
We'd come back in, get the stuff, put it where it needed to go. And that was it. She'd sit with her legs up the wall and I'd go and make burgers. And
what a day.
All in the evening after work.
Yeah. So efficient.
What are you doing tonight? Yeah.
You know, and it was all down to the generosity of this man, really, because as far as I know, he had some friends who hadn't been able to conceive, straight couple, and it had started him thinking about what he wanted to do for people.
It does make you realise how, I mean, without pointing out the bleeding obvious, it makes you realise how much easier it is for gay women than men.
Yes, but I do know female couples who've had quite a lot of sort of difficulty deciding who's going to have the baby and who isn't. There can be quite a lot of jealousy and
I'm sure.
Envy around that. I mean, we never had that at all. And then every time she really pissed me off when we were separating, I just thought about the fact that she had pushed to have our baby and then pushed him out into the world and and the stoicism there. And my anger would evaporate. So I just would call that to mind.
What's your messaging to him now? And are you both mum?
I'm mummy Oo. And she's Mummy B. The reason I'm Mummy Ooh is because he couldn't say Mummy Lou, so he said Mummy Poo, and I was like, no, we're not having
that. That will not stick.
We'll go with Ooh at the moment. But he turned around the other day and went, you are Mummy, and Mummy B is Mum. So he's starting to talk about it. He's got a friend who's got two dads, which we've really nurtured that relationship, so he sees that there's difference there. He still comes out with mummies and daddies. That's his norm. He knows that from books, from TV. He knows that he's different. He outs me all the time. I walk down the street. He goes, I have two mummies. This one is here, Mummy Ooh, and Mummy B is over there. And
right.
I mean, I probably out myself the minute I walk, but He does that. He knows something. He knows he's got two.
How do you feel about the fact that that narrative is still so much about hetero relationships and that's still his norm, as you say?
I just hope that we get it right. I guess I've been focusing so much on his emotional development that I've sort of not been too worried about him. And also, if I'm really honest, and I hate to fall into stereotypes here, but, you know, I do fulfill quite a sort of typical archetypal good father role in that I am the one who always tossed him up in the air, who tipped him upside down, who tickled him. She was always the one who's like, oh, be careful. She breastfed him the whole time all the way through, although he had a go on mine quite a lot. So we have got those roles, and I think that's useful, but I do need to really start thinking about some really good male figures in his life now. Mm. I think that's going to become really important. Mm. It's not very politically correct, is it, to say, I worry that my son will need more male role models, but I do.
I think street girls benefit from having male role models in their lives as well.
My godfathers, I love them. My godmother, both of them. How do you feel about parenthood? I mean, putting you on this.
I still thought this might be coming. I'm not sure is the answer. I'm definitely not desperate for a child now. I'm not that keen on children in general. I have a nephew who is obviously at the top of my list.
Being an aunt is like the best part.
Yeah.
Doesn't really get
don't have to do anything boring stuff. I think if anything, having children in my life, as much as I love those children, has made me more aware that I'm absolutely not ready to be a parent. And I don't really want to change my life that much, which I hear babies do. And I don't know. I think it's being responsible for something else. I really want a dog. I'm trying to get a rescue dog at the moment. But even that, I'm like, going to have to be responsible for something all the time. I've never met anyone that I can kind of imagine being with for the rest of my life. So I guess that's step one.
Sorry to try. None of those things are sexuality related, really, are they?
No, I don't think so.
I can relate to quite a lot of those things.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Although you have now got a dog.
I've got a dog and I've got a husband. A bit of the way there.
Exactly. And like I said, I'm the youngest of five and I'm 30. So my parents obviously by this point thought they'd be awash with grandkids. And they've only got one so far. I think it's, again, a generational thing. No one's
the
expected.
The average first-time mother at the Chelsea and Westminster. It's my favourite stat. 38,
yeah.
Wow.
Couldn't believe that.
It's encouraging.
That's older than you would think, right? My girlfriend had a third though, and she went, well, you know, I'm a bit older. What are you talking about?
You're a spring chicken.
She was like, you just had your third.
And actually, 39. I changed so much between 26 and 36. Mm. And you go through that. I think we change a lot now in our late 20s, early 30s. And I felt like I'd grown enough, just enough, to become a parent. I couldn't have done it any earlier without completely screwing him up, I think.
Yeah, I think if I meet the right person, that might change.
But it has to be the person that you could... This is how I think of it now. It's like, who could I separate from and still be civil with? Who can I cope with being in my life for the rest of my life?
Yeah.
Because you never know how relationships can go. And I know I picked the right person for that. I think she feels the same. It's like, who can I tolerate at family gatherings forever?
Can I abide till
who do
the
I
time?
Want by my side with my crazy family?
And you said you were starting therapy this evening.
Yes.
Is that to confront mental health issues related to being gay, or is that a separate thing? And if it is, tell me to butt out.
It's an obvious question. I think what I don't know is how intertwined they are. Like, one of my first memories is talking to my mum about how anxious I felt when I was 8 or something. And I've always had that, and I should have had therapy ages ago, basically. So I was anxious way before I realised I was gay, whether I was anxious because I knew something was going on that I wasn't aware of. Like I don't know, but I just want to try and relieve some of this anxiety. And I'd be interested as well in kind of what I learn about myself.
Mm-hmm. A gay friend shared a thing on Instagram, must have been at the beginning of the month, to mark the fact that it was Pride Month. But it was saying something like, so many gay people have to hide their identity for so long until they come out, that they then spend their adult lives unpicking the fact that they were trying to be somebody they weren't for such a long time. So not only are they dealing with the kind of all the shit that, you know, heterosexual people deal with as well, they then have the fact that they were hiding their identity for such a long time and kind of how that much that would fuck you up, basically. Yeah, exactly.
And also just to say what I was thinking of earlier when we were talking about countries where people get killed is that, you know, one thing I never realised, and then when I came out, I realised, is that choosing where to go on holiday is difficult. You know, and you always get looked at around the pool. But I don't want to give my money to certain places. Like, I've been to the Caribbean a lot on press trips. I love it. But St. Lucia was tricky. You know, when you're in a taxi and you're asked, what does your husband do? And I would be like, he works in theatre, because I made that call that
it's dangerous.
It's dangerous. It's still illegal in a lot of places in the Caribbean. So, you know, there are places all over the world that I just wouldn't go. Dubai, nice place to go for 5 days of really hot sun. No way.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't
no way. Not even on my own. On the whole, there are so many things that you only realise when you come out that are actually still different. And when I came out, it was 2009, I think. And I don't know if it was just me, but I found booking hotels very difficult and turning up at reception as two women. I think a lot of that was my own shame.
So how have you overcome that? Or are there places you've gone for information that have told you where you can book a holiday? Or are there other bits of advice you can share with people who might be not where you are at this stage, Lucy, which seems somebody very comfortable in their own skin? And
I do feel that nowadays. I just think self-acceptance is a big project, you know, and then as I said, you know, sexuality might be a bigger piece of that project for some people. For me, it was a medium-sized piece, and other pieces were around kind of, I don't know, accepting my shame about other things and working through other issues that I had. So I think it's all about self-acceptance, self-compassion, as a, just viewing that as like the journey, to use that term, rather than I am going to sort out my sexuality. That might be the springboard, but there's always more to it.
Are there other books you've read or things you've listened to, people you've turned to, places you've gone to for guidance or help, or do you just have to figure it out yourself, do you think?
I did a lot of figuring out myself, and I think that's what I realised was really lacking when I was growing up. I didn't really have a sort of gay role model that would have helped normalise it, I think, and encourage me to grow into that space. So it was a lot about figuring out myself without anyone around me. I mean, I think my first foray was, I guess you watched The L Word.
Oh, yeah.
This is a sort of gateway TV series for lesbians, I think.
It's
kind of the only series that actually had mostly lesbian protagonists.
And that was quite a long time ago.
They just released a new series.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. One last summer, one coming this summer.
And I, you know, I classic had the box set under my bed.
Mm, me too.
Yeah. And then the builders came and painted my room and it was just up on the shelf next to Sugar Rush. I was like, yeah. Outed.
Who are the role models now?
Yeah,
if, you know, if you...
Well, I mean, Ellen's been huge.
I was going to say, yeah. It's such a cliche.
Well, because
she's
older and
she's still...
Yeah. Clever woman.
Yeah.
You know, people who are out...
Sandy Toksvig.
Sandy Toksvig.
She's amazing.
But as in, if you know, they're all fantastic, of course, but who's out there? Or what literature or TV is there out there?
I think that, obviously, it's increased a lot, but the presence is still really lacking. Mm-hmm. If you think of sort of mainstream media films that have been released in the last 10 years, you know, how many of them have had main lesbian characters? Mm. I can think of
where it's not about lesbians.
Where it's not about,
that's what's so important. Books like the adverts are coming out for Colgate. No,
she's a lawyer. Yeah.
It's not like, oh, there's that gay advert.
Yeah.
It's not.
Have you seen Booksmart?
Yeah,
they do that really well.
Yeah,
I think really well.
Fantastic.
It's happening. It's happening.
Yeah. When we were talking about this, and someone in our team said to me, you know, you're a slightly different generation to some people in our team, and there'll be people in our team. You know, I'm 40, who are in the early 20s, who don't need educating on this. And to me, there isn't that much out there. And to me, not that it's not normal, because I wouldn't bat an eyelid if somebody was gay, but to me, it doesn't feel massively mainstream, certainly, in the media. Or as you say,
yeah,
there happens to be three sisters in this. Yeah. One of them's a lawyer, she's married to women. One of them's a something. Yeah. The narrative is around the fact that they are a lesbian.
And I think it's women in particular. I feel like there's much more narrative around gay men.
Yeah, the lag is there for sure.
So far, And I think it's important to say it's part of a bigger conversation about difference, you know, and this relates to everything around race issues, to trans issues, to anything around not being in the norm, whatever the hell that is. But
majority.
Yeah, the majority. And I guess I embrace that. It's like, yes, I'm not in the majority and I love it. And I find being gay really sexy. Like, I feel hot being a gay woman and being out. So obviously it's right for me, you know, but also I'm not repressed in our society at all. Mm. So I've just been able to embrace it. But it's a bigger question.
Mm. And what advice can you give to people listening?
I mean, I can't give you the quick fix. I have spent, as I said, 10 years. I keep saying 10, it's probably 11 now, in and out of therapy. I have read so many self-development books. I've worked so hard. I've been on courses, not just about my sexuality, but self-development.
If you could go back to your 26-year-old self.
Oh, God, I just give her the
what
biggest
would you
hug.
Do differently? Yeah.
And I tell her that everyone else's shame is theirs and loads of people project onto you. And I just say, follow your heart. You know, I feel quite emotional answering that question because I was so locked up in so many ways. You'd recognize my sense of humor and my voice and my face, and that'll be it. Like, I just feel so much more chilled now. I've made it my life as well. I've written about it. I've I'm training in it.
I also think that's an age, and as, yeah, I'm 40, you're nearly there. But, you know, I feel like there comes that confidence with age, and I'm a heterosexual woman with a fairly, like, quite traditional life. I definitely feel more confident in myself and who I am, and the fact that not everyone's going to like me, and we've all been through ups and downs. Yeah. But I feel like I'm finally coming to the age where I'm like, this is me, I've got a loud voice, I'm quite bossy, and... Yeah, I say the wrong thing sometimes, but I'm not a bitch, and I do care. And if you didn't like that, or you're intimidated by that, like, do you know what? Fine, you can't please everybody, you can't be liked by everybody. But I think that is something that maybe as women we all have to go through,
and most
regardless.
Women say that. Most women do say that, and even more so people in their 50s and their 60s, that every kind of 10 years or so, that it's a journey that you're on, and you know, but it... You get to that point of self-acceptance and it just takes that time.
Right? Yeah. And you're, I mean, a bit behind Lucy age-wise, but to girls who are listening to this and aren't out yet, and you still, you know, had nearly a decade of experience of being a lesbian, what would you say?
I think what would have helped me is just being told that you're not on your own. I genuinely at one point, for quite a long time actually, when I first came out, thought I was going to be alone and lonely. For, you know, I thought that was what my life held, and just know that's not the case, and that most of the people you meet are going to be wonderful about it, and you'll meet some gorgeous people along the way. Like I said, some of my best friends I met through dating. And I think the main thing, you know, it's easy to say, is just don't be ashamed of it, that it's not something to be embarrassed about, and that you will come to accept it, and that you will come to love it. And I think we both feel the same way, that you wouldn't then change it for the world, and it's an amazing way to be.
And for people who are listening, who want to support somebody who has recently come out, or, you know, Lucy, you mentioned people getting it wrong. What is the right way, obviously, apart from with tenderness and compassion and love and all of that, what is the right thing to do and the right way to approach it to support somebody?
It's the right way to support someone going through any time of transition, change or challenge. And that is to be curious and to not assume anything, to ask questions and to empathize and be like, if it seems like a big deal, say, I can see this is a big deal for you. Not say what might feel right, which is, being gay is nothing anymore. It's like, what is going on for you? Tell me about it. I'm so glad you told me. What do you need from me as a friend? Should we go and play tennis? You know, like...
acknowledge that it's a big deal.
Yeah, acknowledge it's a big deal and be curious about their experience, because it will never be exactly as you think it is.
And don't treat people differently afterwards, I guess, as well.
Can we finish just with some words on Pride Month? How do you feel about Pride Month as gay women? Is it important?
Yeah, I mean, it's that horrible cliche of, like, obviously try and be proud all year round. And I know people can see it negatively, and it's, you know, companies trying to monetize it and printing all these rainbow t-shirts and things. But I think it's all part of the widest, you know, encouraging positive change longer term, which is good. Whether people just use it for celebration or to really educate themselves, I think it's just the visibility of it is good. And it's just a nice reminder to, you know, talk about being gay and be proud. You know, I've only got like a very small platform on Instagram, but I try and be as, because I felt like that presence was lacking in my life when I was growing up, I try and be as open about my sexuality as possible. And I've somehow sort of organically fostered this quite queer community, which is quite nice. And, you know, if it helps even one person be more open about their sexuality or overcome any insecurities, then that is a positive thing for me.
Because life is short and you don't want to waste. If you know, don't waste the time. Just, that's short. Everyone's going.
Yeah, stuff. Pride Month, you know, it's fun. Celebration. That's nice.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I feel post-COVID that I didn't notice because I assumed everything would be shut. And that's really sad. I think this is really important in terms of modelling to other parts of the world that there are safe places to be. And trying to change the views here as well. So I think Pride Month's great, It is a lot of drinking drugs, so I think I'm slightly less into it than I used to be. But, hey, people need to let off steam.
Well, thank you both so much for joining us. Well, you shared lots of words of wisdom. I've definitely learned a lot. And, yeah, I'm sure that, as you said, you've given some comfort to people listening.
No, I hope so.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us. It was lovely.
That's it for today. If you enjoyed that, then do please rate, review, subscribe, tell your friends to listen to, and we'll be back soon. Thanks very much. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.